like to call the April 18th, 2022 City of Columbia Council meeting to order. For those who are able, please join me in standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Sheila, will you call the roll?
Ms. Buffalo.
Here.
Ms. Fowler.
Here.
Ms. Wainer.
Here.
Mr. Scala.
Here.
Mr. Foster.
Here.
Mr. Pitzer.
Here.
Ms. Peters.
All right, and for minutes, we do not have any current minutes to approve. The city clerk is working on those, and we will get those at future upcoming meetings. Do I have any adjustments to the agenda for tonight?
Madam Chair, just one adjustment. I'm requesting B10822 from the consent agenda. And the city clerk will put that on the
old business.
Okay. So B10822 off consent and on to old business. Any other adjustments? All right. Hearing none, can I have a motion and second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All right. All those in favor of the agenda as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. All right. So we don't have any special items on for the city council. Our first thing that we have on is appointments to boards and commissions. One of the things I wanted to say was that, it's awesome to be up here and to see all y'all in the audience. You have a few opportunities to speak during city council meetings. We have scheduled public comments. We have on old business and new business public comment periods. And then at the end, there's also opportunities for coming up for anything to be talked about. One of the other benefits and privileges that the city council has is to make appointments to our boards and commissions. And tonight we have a few to appoint. I did want to make a first request before we get into the discussion and the role for calling this. We have a couple boards and commissions that I would like to recommend that we re-advertise. There used to be, council used to have an opportunity to conduct short, brief interviews with members interested in serving on board and commissions. And so with that, I would like to reinstate that practice. I think it gives us an opportunity to learn more about those who volunteer their time to serve. And the commissions, I'm not sure if we're gonna have as much time based on our two work sessions in May. And so what I'm proposing for tonight is that we honor the applications that we have for the Citizens Police Review Board and for our Planning and Zoning Commission, honoring those, but also accepting additional applications. And for that, that gives us an opportunity. Those would then be due May, is it 6th?
Friday the 6th.
Those would be Friday, May 6th by 5 p.m. additional ones. In the meantime, I would like to encourage for my current council members to contact, because we might not have time for interviews, so to contact our applicants and ask them the questions that will be important for leading. I would like to set the precedent, though, that in the future for these and other really important our boards and commissions, that we take that time to interview if we can for ones going through. And then that way we can actually build it in the time. You have a question.
I just have a question, and that is there was a note on the list of applicants, particularly with respect to the Police Review Board, that there was some glitch of some sort that they were not able to complete the questionnaires that took a look at the backgrounds and so on. Do you know anything about that, Nancy, or maybe the city clerk does? Or is that pending, or is there some issue about finding out about those backgrounds? Or
I think they will be provided in the future. Maybe DeCarlin can chime in, or Nancy, because all we do is provide convictions, so I think they will be provided in the future. The method about how they obtain that information, I think, is going to change, but they will provide that information.
Hopefully we can catch up when we do this again, so.
Right. And so part of it is part of that information, and part of it, you know, I think it would be a best practice, and it's something that City Council used to do, is to spend more time, because these people are volunteering their time, and I think it's important to get to know our board and commission members. So what this would do is for those two, it would re-advertise, and then at our May 16th meeting would be the one of which we would be appointing the members. I've also been aware that we have an additional vacancy on the Citizens Police Review Board, so we'd be appointing that as well. So this allows additional applications for that. And planning and zoning, the current terms go through till the end of May anyway, so they will continue to serve.
I have a point of clarification.
Yeah.
So are we going to have a time before the meeting starts for that interview process?
This is the thing I was trying to look into with our timing. And after hearing back from staff, I heard that we don't have, I think we have two booked work sessions on those Mondays before those council meetings. And based on the timing of when the applications come in, I don't think we could do that off Monday because the applications don't come in until the 6th. And so even if we did it on the main night, I don't think that'd give enough time for the turnaround.
So, and it would be too late to do it this at the work session or before the work session on the night we're going to appoint?
So that's the one that I believe we have a two-hour work session with the Integrated Electric Resource or Task Force. And so they plan on using that whole time because they imagine it to go over. But I'm open to suggesting if we have the time to do time before, if that's what you're recommending, if people have the ability to come early.
So currently what we do is that we either call the applicants ourselves, which I have done, and then, or they reach out to us and we speak with them. So we'll, what you're doing is institutionalizing that process so
correct.
That everybody knows that that's what we do.
Correct.
Including the applicants.
Exactly.
That we will call you and speak with you.
Yes.
So they could conceivably take 7 phone calls.
Well, my hope is this, yeah, I think we can figure out, yeah, that best practice for that
yeah.
and how it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's okay.
Okay. Sheila, do I need to do anything in specific for that one just besides the recommendation?
No, I understand that you, as long as you all are agreeable, I will re-advertise for both those vacancies, and then they'll come back to you for the May 16th meeting. But I think,
yes. Sorry.
So, you know, I get CPRB, we're, you know, not, we don't have all the information, you know, on the one thing. P&Z, it's strictly because you want to do interviews, correct?
Correct.
What other boards would you want to do interviews for?
Water and Light Advisory Board.
Okay.
Those are the three that I think of that we often hear the most feedback on. Did you have other?
Board of Adjustment, possibly.
I think
those were historically.
So this is the ones that we historically used to do interviews for
mm-hmm.
on planning and zoning and CBRB when it first started. So it's just kind of to reinsert that one. But then I'm open to the conversation about what else to do. I'm also mindful over your face that is telling me about the times for meetings for doing interviews.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the timing issue, and then there's also, you know, sort of the, you start doing it for Board of Adjustment, and then, you know, another commission might think that they
so
warrant
one of the things that,
well.
Yeah, one of the things that I don't know if this is time to talk about, we also used to meet annually with board and commissions, like chair and vice chair, to talk about the mission of the board and the board, upcoming issues or high priorities, as well as ones of staff. And so I would like to reinstate that practice, which I think helps build some of that understanding of who the board is. It might take out some of the need for the additional pieces.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, we have had the scheduling issues for getting all 7 of us together, and I would want to be mindful of us all having the same information, you know, when we make decisions. So, you know, we currently have the opportunity to call people individually and reach out and communicate with them individually. So if we do institutionalize something, I guess those are challenges that I see, right?
Yeah.
If not all 7 of us are able to attend the same interview session at the same time, then you've got different information. So,
and I guess it could be the sort of thing that for interviewing associate judges, where it's almost like a small group of, and then that way there are like minutes taken, and then all the information is shared amongst the council, might be a good approach in the medium. Were you gonna say the same?
That's just what
okay.
I was gonna say. Ms. Peters and I actually interviewed the associate justices, and we'll recommend that to the rest of the city. I mean, I would love to have everybody be able to do this. I understand the demands on time and so on. Historically, I mean, there used to be 8 or 9 candidates for some of the planning and zoning commissions, and we used to allot about 10 minutes or so for each one of those in order for the entire group before, I mean, usually before a work session, to interview those folks. But I understand it's a little more complicated now, and there are time demands, so we may have to adjust that. But
are we okay with re-advertising for these two and going down this path for this? Okay.
As long as I can still do what I do now, which is I contact and talk with them.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
Okay. So moving on then for our next appointments to boards and commissions, we do have, so we have a voice basically. We have one applicant for a lot of these. For the Commission on Cultural Affairs, we have one vacancy and one applicant. So if we want, we can appoint Kathleen Murphy to that, if there's no objection.
Without objection.
No objection.
No objection.
Okay. For the Downtown Columbia Leadership Council, we have one vacancy and one applicant. This is for the non-specific vacancy in the term ending in 2025. So if there's no objection, I would like to appoint Melissa McGowan.
No objection.
No objection.
We will need to re-advertise for the other two vacancies that have to be representatives of neighborhood associations. For the next one, the Liquor License Review Board, we have one vacancy and one applicant. If there's no objections, I'd like to say Brian Gardner.
No objection.
On the Mayor's Council on Physical Fitness and Health, we have one vacancy and one applicant. This is becoming, you know, routine. Huh. I'd like to appoint Robert Walker. If there's any objections, no.
Objection.
All right.
That's your call.
All right, it's my council. And so the final one is the Substance Abuse and Advisory Commission. We have one vacancy and one applicant. So recommending Joshua Moore, if there's no objections.
Without objection.
No objections. Okay. All right, moving on. So in addition to what I mentioned earlier for opportunities to talk, if you have an interest in speaking about something that's not on tonight's city council meeting or the night city council meeting, you can get a request into the city manager's and city clerk's office by noon of the Wednesday before. And we have one scheduled public comment, so I'd like to invite Jim Windsor up to the podium.
Hi, I'm Jim Windsor, 200 Manor Drive. Those of you that have previously been on the council have had many people come up representing organizations talking about 100% renewables by 2030. And I know those of you that just ran also had people asking you about that. I wish I could support that. I can't. I know too much about the issue. I worked, for those of you that don't know, I worked for the city for almost 36 years. I retired as assistant director of utilities. I handled all of the financial side, much of the negotiations regarding renewable contracts, our operation in MISO on the financial side. So I wanted to talk to you tonight about that issue and about what I believe is really a more important issue. So first of all, what does 100% renewables mean? It sounds like a good idea. Most people probably think that it's all of the energy requirements will be provided by renewable energy. That's just not possible with today's technology. Solar and wind are intermittent resources. Battery technology at maximum capacity will only last for 2 to 3 hours for a fully charged utility grade system. What it really means is that city would buy the equivalent amount of energy that is, that we use as a whole, which is about 1.2 million megawatt hours on an annual basis, from renewable sources, so that we could say we're 100% renewable. In reality, we would still be using the same fossil fuels that we use now. This is a graph of the Truman solar field. And this field is probably the state of the art in solar because it has an axis. It looks to the east in the morning and follows the sun to the west. This is on the peak day. Solar is a good source. It produces energy during the daytime when loads are the highest, when the energy needs are the highest. But once again, it is an intermittent resource. The peak occurred at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The 10 megawatt, it's actually a 14 megawatt DC field and a 10 megawatt AC field. It was producing 4 megawatts on peak. The next hour, the peak had gone down about 9%. The solar field was producing nothing. That gives you an example of the problem. In the renewable energy report this year, I don't know if you've gotten it yet, but you will, about 70% or over 70% of the renewable energy purchased actually doesn't even come to Columbia. The largest renewable energy purchased is from Iowa wind farms, and it's just sold into the MISO system at that point. And none of that counts as capacity requirements for us here in Columbia. So, and this year, they almost exceeded the 3% cap. Some people say, well, we can just go ahead and increase that. Well, that impacts low-income people. It impacts businesses that are at the margin of their operations, so we have to be very careful. We have enough existing contracts, the 64-megawatt solar contract and the 35-megawatt wind contract, although that's in question given the state Senate pursuing the stopping of the Grain Belt Express. We have to have that in order for that contract to be delivered to meet about a 40% level. So we have under contract already enough to meet a 40% level. The market is extremely complex. The difference between capacity and energy. So the 1.2 megawatt or million megawatt hours is the energy side. Capacity is the maximum demand plus reserves we have to have. The only wind contract that actually has any capacity for us is from Associated. It's 8% of the registered capacity is what we can count towards our capacity amount. Some of these other ones might get to 30%, but the wind doesn't blow as much in the summertime. So we have to address this all very carefully. So what am I? I am very concerned, and it looks like I'm about to run out of time, but we are basically, right now, we're looking at pouring everything into a leaky bucket, whether it's coal, wind, solar, whatever. We're wasting energy, we're wasting opportunity for building jobs locally, and we're wasting money. So what I think we should be doing is instead of buying more, we should be using less. And while Water and Light has some excellent programs, they're all voluntary. And recently, I've been up here before to talk about the need for infrastructure. There is nothing stopping new homes, new apartments from putting in the lowest efficiency air conditioning systems, which that was implemented in 2006, but was passed during the Clinton administration and hasn't changed. Why can't we set up something different? So I guess I'm over time, so I should stop. But
thank you, Mr. Windsor.
You're welcome.
It's like you're lucky there's no other scheduled public comments. No, thank you. And a copy of this presentation has been given to council and will be in. So thank you. All right, so we have no public hearings this evening. So I will ask Sheila to read Bill 10622.
Council Bill 10622 is an ordinance granting a waiver and design adjustment relating to the final plat of Quarry Heights, Plat 7, for sidewalk construction on the south and west sides of Rollins Road and the west side of Redbud Lane, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Thank you. Is there a staff report?
Yes, there is, Madam Mayor. Good evening, everyone. I'm Tim Teddy, Community Development Director. This is a request to waive the sidewalk requirement for what is a recently created lot known as Quarry Heights Plat 7. It's intended to be a future home site, and you can see the location is on the south side of Rollins Road, right where Rollins turns abruptly east and then runs into Glenwood Avenue, and you can see it also splits into Redbud and Edgewood, and out of frame to the south you have Lakeshore, which includes an access to the MKT trail. It's a pretty good size lot. It's almost 9/10 of an acre. And again, it's the request is to waive the sidewalk. We call it a design adjustment. This is being done separate from the plat, because when the plat went through the Planning and Zoning Commission and then Council, this waiver had not been requested, and it is required of all subdivision plats unless waived. There's an overview of the neighborhood. You can see a lot of tree canopy. This is actually looking more in a southerly direction, and that's Rollins Road that runs straight be west of the site out towards West Boulevard. And then you can see where it curves south there. And then this feature right here is the Quarry Lake that's part of the Quarry Heights neighborhood from which the subdivision takes its name. So again, recently platted, it is zoned for a single family residence. The applicant is a civil group, and the property owners, the Gibbs, have said in testimony they intend to build a house amid the wooded cover on the lot. And this white dash line will just indicate the portion of frontage in which a sidewalk will be built. And one of the things you notice from these various aerial photographs is there is no sidewalk anywhere in this neighborhood. They're just, these are homes that were constructed in the 1940s, early 50s, that range of dates. And in those days, streets in Columbia were commonly not built with sidewalks. So there is not a network of sidewalk infrastructure in this neighborhood. They would be, if required to be constructed, it would be 1 foot within the public right-of-way and for 390 feet in length. And this is considered an improved street. It's got curb and gutter for drainage. The design adjustment criteria that we use are spelled out there. Paraphrasing from the ordinance, basically we look at plans and whether the request is consistent with our plans and any policies, whether or not there are adverse impacts to abutting lands if the sidewalk were waived, whether or not there's difficulty or danger to traffic circulation that will result from building a home without a fronting sidewalk, and then whether or not there are unique features or design character, both of the site and the surroundings, and then whether or not there's adverse impacts on public health and safety, generally speaking. So the Planning and Zoning Commission examined this request using those criteria. You can see one of the things that defines the character of the area is a lot of vegetation, a lot of tall vegetation across not only this lot but other lots in the neighborhood. Grades are fairly level, so you know the staff thinks it'll receive a sidewalk. There will be some tree removal, nothing that would be a significant tree in terms of the city's ordinance, which protects trees that are 20 inch and greater in diameter. But there would be tree removal, no doubt, to accommodate this sidewalk, which would not connect to another sidewalk at either end. And this gives you an idea of some of the curvature of the road, and you can see the curb and gutter there. Some of the streets labeled Westwood, Rollins, Redbud, Glenwood, Edgewood. There are a number of public comments, both before, during, and since the Planning and Zoning Commission, probably 11, maybe a dozen comments in support of the sidewalk waiver. And the commission itself made a recommendation of 5 in favor, 2 against the waiver, one member abstaining. And one of the reasons this is on old business is greater than 75% in favor is required to place an item on consent. I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions from council? I was going to ask Nick really quick. Nick, this is your ward. Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions? Staff.
Well, just I'm learning about this, of course. So the staff, this is in conflict with the UDC, correct?
Yeah, there isn't anything in the ordinance that says if you have a platted lot and there's no sidewalk connect to that, we can automatically waive that sidewalk. So that's not said in the ordinance.
But staff does recommend waiving.
Well, we wrote in our report to the Planning and Zoning Commission that we didn't find in the ordinance that just not having sidewalk to connect to wasn't sufficient. There's some other criteria that need to be looked at. But the commission, the majority of the commission, did find that it meets the criteria that they are authorized to look at when considering these waivers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I am familiar with this. I've ridden my bike. Barbara and I were talking about this earlier today, that we've ridden our bike down there. It's actually pretty steep. You describe it as flat there, but it's...
There's curvature both ways.
Definitely use your brakes on the way down the hill. But one other question is, was this... I see there's a house just to the, what is that, west of this?
The one with the R1 label on it?
Yeah, right. So did that house take the entirety of this lot? Has it been divided for the construction of another house there? Do you know?
I think at one time there might have been, not the present owner, but maybe a previous owner that had both this current Quarry Heights lot, as right. It's called, and then the track that's... Right. Identified as, it's 02, is it 702 Rollins?
And there's 02. Not currently anything constructed on that piece?
This one, there's sculptures, the right. Stone stack sculptures, no habitable structures.
Okay.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, just a question. I'm not intimately familiar with this territory right here, but and there is a good deal of tree cover here, and there are a few buildings that are obvious here. But generally speaking, in this area, even though some of these lots are they mostly unpopulated lots with just tree cover on them, or are most of the lots here just grandfathered in that didn't require sidewalks in the past and so on? And is
yeah, there's a lot of houses. This is basically a built-out neighborhood.
Okay.
Spacious lots, a lot of wooded cover. So you see this overwhelming tree canopy when you look at the aerial. But, yeah, this is one of the last available building sites here. And it's just in an era, basically the middle of the last century, Columbia right. did not require sidewalks to be built.
Right. Thank you.
So there's been a lot of that activity, and people have said, at least those that commented, said we like it just fine. We have been able to make do walking in the street and such.
Oh, yes, Matt.
Is there a payment in lieu here?
No, sir.
What's our framework for asking for payment in lieu?
Well, it's considered it's a special case of a waiver, typically done in these unimproved street situations where it might be more of a rural cross-section road, and you're looking at maybe some other place downstream where that money could be spent. We'd have to spend it really in an area that would benefit this property, at least in my judgment. So that's why we're not putting that forward as a recommendation.
So, like, if the city was going to have a project in that area at some point, then
yeah, the MKT trailhead didn't exist, for example. That's at the end of Lakeshore, but there is a connector there, so people can actually ride their bikes and walk and get right on the MKT okay. trail from this neighborhood.
So it's kind of your judgment on whether there's a use for it within the immediate vicinity?
Yeah, and it's I think you're going to come into disruptive conditions wherever you'd put it on another lot. Does that make sense? Because you have houses with driveways already existing on the neighboring lots.
Okay, thanks.
Are we going to hear from the applicant or?
Yes. Yeah, so okay. I wanted to open up just in case we have any questions
for staff.
For
the applicant.
Okay.
Yes.
Anything else, Andrea? Anything? Okay. All right. So, does anyone from the public wish to speak on Bill 10622? I'll ask you also to please say your name and address so that we can have it in the record for the clerk.
Good evening and welcome to our new mayor and our new fourth ward councilperson, and good evening to the rest of the councilpeople. I've got some handouts here, just some pictures additionally, and if you just take my pass. Again, Kevin Murphy with Ace Civil Group, offices at 3401 Broadway Business Park Court. As Mr. Teddy had pointed out, this is a built-out neighborhood. It's a very walkable neighborhood. If you spend any time down here, there's people biking and walking, accessing the trail. a number of these homes in this area, a limited number of these homes in this area, have access to the quarry at the end of Lakeshore Drive. And so there's typically lots of where they have a big swimming, an old quarry, it's filled in where they swim. I've got tennis courts there, playground equipment and such. And so there's a lot of historic foot traffic, pedestrian traffic, bike traffic in this area. And as you can see in your packets, there's been many people in the neighborhood that like it as it is, that they haven't had an issue with this. Or they like as the least amount of pavement as possible. The nearest sidewalk to connect to this would be on Stewart Roads, roughly 1,200 feet away. There's practical difficulties in building sidewalk on this property, even though it is a curb and guttered street. The right-of-way is not graded as it should be to put in a sidewalk. There's drainage issues, or drainage work would have to be done to get pick up drainage before it crosses the sidewalk. On the east side of the road, kind of on the Glenwood Avenue portion, there's a core regulated stream that then it crosses Redbud and then eventually crosses Lakeshore Drive again. And it is basically at the back of the sidewalk all through there, so or back of the curb. So putting a sidewalk in those locations is would be daunting, if not possible. There's rock cliffs on the adjacent side, just many topographical issues up and down the street. You know, again, this lot, and I think there's a lot at the very end of the cul-de-sac and Glenwood Avenue, I believe, are the only two lots that aren't built out in this subdivision. So other than that, if you have any questions, we have an answer.
Would you entertain, did you have a, or do you?
I'm gonna ask Mr. Okay. Gibbs.
Well, thank you.
Sure, thanks.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Finley Gibbs. My wife, Rebecca, is also here. Our current address is 106 South Glenwood Avenue, which is almost due north of this particular lot. We're just south of Broadway. There were a couple of things that I noted as I was listening to people talk, and I would agree with the statement that it's not a particularly level lot. I think it's around 10% total. Drop according to the topo maps that the city provides coming from west to east. I would also point out that the neighbors due south, which is I believe the Lavender family, have written an email requesting this variance go through. The family due west and then the next house due west also were part of the group of the positive emails. And then due north is Brian Waller's house. He's kind of my boss, but he also sent in an email approving this particular variance. And I think a lot of truth about this is that this is an area where there's a lot of foot traffic, but there's not a lot of car traffic. When you pull back on this map view, there isn't access to any of the arteries that you're gonna see in town. Yeah, that's a great version of that. You know, the major arteries near there are Providence, Broadway, and Stadium. And this is kind of dead center in the middle, and it doesn't provide a path to get from one area to another to avoid traffic, for instance. The statement, too, about where the sidewalks are located nearby, it's past West Boulevard to the west. You have to go up to Stewart to the north, but that's not direct. So it's quite a distance. And I've got a minute left, so I thought I would, somebody had a question over here.
So I have walked your neighborhood. I'm surprised at how many of your neighbors I actually know because I live far from there. But it used to be a place that I walked regularly with my dog and friends. And you have what we call gnome people on that land, G-N-O-M-E people.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, my interest is purely about what's going to happen to the gnome people.
So I haven't actually gotten to see the gnome people, but I've seen a lot of these pieces of sculpture
mm-hmm.
that were done by the prior owner who used to live in the house due west.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan for us, and of course, you know, everybody's got a plan until something bad happens, but the plan for us is to put a single-story house back in the lot, relatively far from the street, and leave as many trees as humanly possible. Now, that would also leave as many of those sculptures as possible around the outside of the lot. Plus, the former owner planted a huge number of Missouri native wildflowers around this loop in the very location where the sidewalk would have to go. And to be clear, too, the statement that Mr. Murphy made about the water flow issues, that is currently a ditch where the sidewalk would want to go. And so the traditional method of figuring out the cost of a sidewalk figured it would be about $26,000 to do that. I think that is egregiously low. My guesstimate, it would be more than double than that because you have to do something with that water. You can't run it under the street. And so you'd have to build up, probably take out some of the gnomes, and you'd have to take out most of those wildflowers and some trees. We really want to preserve that. That's why we bought that lot. It's because we love the trees, we love the area, and we wanted to have a quiet place back from the road if it's possible.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the applicant? No? All right. Thank you, Finley.
Thank you.
Does anybody else from the public wish to speak on Bill 10622? None. Are there any other council comments? All right. Sheila, will you call the roll on Bill 10622?
Council Bill 10622, Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Fowler?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
All right. And the next we had, Sheila, will you please pulled off consent Bill 10822?
Council Bill 10822 is an ordinance authorizing the city manager to execute an annexation agreement with Charlotte M. Frazier and Melissa L. Usury for property located on the west side of Olivet Road and south of Richland Road, directing the city clerk to have the agreement recorded and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Is there a staff report?
An abbreviated one. Yes, this is an annexation agreement due to city policy that says when a property owner requests connection to the city's wastewater collection and treatment system, they need to either petition for annexation if they are directly abutting or contiguous to the city boundary, or as in this case, if they're not abutting or contiguous to a city boundary, they have to sign an annexation agreement that says at such time in the future when the city boundary gets to the property, they would consent to annexation. And the way that our agreements are written is the council really controls the timing of that, so we're not binding ourselves to immediate annexation necessarily at the time that happens. But it's been the longstanding policy that the property owner and then the succession of owners agree to annex in return for that connection. So an agreement's been developed. The connection would be to a trunk sewer that's running parallel to the South Fork of the Grindstone Creek. And the creek is a feature within this tract. They're proposing to the county a preliminary subdivision of 18 fairly large residential lots, about an acre in size each, and a street that comes in off of Olivet and would have a cul-de-sac, would have a dead end at the west boundary of the property and also the north boundary. They are not proposing to run any street into or over the creek, and there is, in fact, a mapped stream buffer, and that's an area that prohibits grading and certain types of use within a distance of the stream edge, and that's so to protect the stream bank, but also to protect property from erosion that streams can cause. And there's also some regulatory floodplain on this property. As far as the connection to sewer goes, it's our understanding this will be standard rates as laid out in the city ordinance. That's what the agreement says, so there's no waiver of that. There are also some provisions in the city ordinances, land development ordinances, that the county does not have that will be features in this subdivision. So things like tree preservation, for example, they will provide to us a tree preservation plan to the extent that there would be trees that are required to be protected. So that concludes my report.
Thank you for that. And Carl, you're the one who pulled it.
Yeah, just a question. The only question I had, I did a cursory review of this because it was on consent agenda, and then a resident came up to me and asked me about some of the watershed and drainage issues, the potential. You've expounded on that to some degree. Any clarification in terms of the annexation agreement? Does it go into that any more than what you've just suggested, or is...
Well, they're going to, I'll look at some of the provisions that I just mentioned in general, and probably the reason there's not a lot of language about stream buffering and such is that the county does have similar ordinances. They do have a stormwater manual, do have a stormwater management ordinance. There is that buffer that's indicated on the plat. So they are intending to protect the stream edge. They have a floodplain ordinance, so that'll regulate development of these lots that might be, and some of them do have what's termed the 1% annual event flood risk on them. So they'll have to get floodplain development permits for a couple of the lots, it looks like.
Well, that's the question I had. Since we're reviewing this, is there may be someone that wants to speak.
Right, yeah. So would anyone from the public wish to speak on Bill 108-22?
Yeah, I saw this. My name's Dee Dock, and I live at 804 Agin Street. And I saw this late this afternoon, and I just thought because of the interaction with Grindstone, pretty significant, this would be a chance just to bring it to so we people could see it to awareness, even though it probably doesn't affect the annexation agreement much. I did call the county. They said that their hydrologist encouraged them to put in a wetland restoration, I think, where their stormwater detention is now. I'm thinking that. I'm not sure. See, I was hoping that if the Crockett was here or the landowners, they could kind of describe how they're protecting it, because there are a lot of lines intersecting the buffer, the floodplain. Don't know whether that just means the property lines are there, but they're going to stay out of it, you know, whether there's going to be any buffer mitigation and things like that. But mainly I just wanted us to see, yes, this is going on. Someday this will be in the city. It's going to affect Grindstone, and they have declined to do a wetland restoration, which would have been good.
Anyone like the? Would anyone else from the public wish to speak on Bill 108-22? Okay, council comments. I see you, Pat. Yeah.
Yes, I have a couple of questions, and this is what I call a problem capable of repetition, because we're back with this policy decision that was signed in 1997 with the Boone County Regional Sewer District, that even though I understand we have a choice at a later date as to whether or not we annex it into the city, it doesn't give the property owner a choice whether or not they become part of the city. And we're growing without the planning ahead of time for making sure we have sufficient infrastructure. So I want to ask a question. My first question is, I want to ask a question that when is the appropriate time for us to look at this as a policy matter and decide if this is the way in which we want to proceed? Because when folks want to use a sewer that we already leased to the Boone County Regional Sewer District, then they find themselves having to enter into an agreement with us saying that they will annex in at a future date. And while we get some downstream revenue from their services, we still have to provide other services that we may not be reimbursed for at the outset as we customarily are. We will have public safety services we have to provide. We may or may not have them as ratepayers. So that's my first concern, and I want to put that out to our new council that I will be looking for opportunities for when we can revisit the underlying policy of this. And then my second question is, I had a note in my margin that said that there was a traffic study and a contribution of some small amount of money towards a traffic improvement. Is that correct, Mr. Teddy?
Yeah, and it's $11,400. It's proportionate to what another subdivision paid, and it just states in the agreement that that is to be put towards intersection improvements on Richland Road. So it gives some flexibility as to which intersection. The staff have been looking at Grace Lane, Rolling Hills, Richland, because all four corners of that intersection are in the city limits. But there's still some flexibility on where that's applied.
So one of the things that jumped in my head was, so there's a traffic study that presumably the applicant has paid for it. I'm not aware that we front the money for traffic studies.
Yeah, this is a county project, so it's under their procedures.
Okay, so yeah. Whoever paid for that. So we rely upon those findings in making correct? We rely upon those traffic study findings, whoever paid for it, in making findings as to what we think is an appropriate contribution for them to make.
Yeah, we're including it in the agreement because we want to make sure that it addresses needs that are common to the jurisdictions.
So it's a relatively small number.
It is.
And so one of the other things I wanted to bring to council's attention is going forward, can we also have a conversation about the contribution that we ask? I mean, presumably this property will be annexed into the city at some point. And $11,000 in the bank for whenever we get around to an intersection improvement sounds like we're not planning appropriately for infrastructure improvements going forward. So I wanted to, we only get to talk about things when we have examples, and this is an example of two problems capable of repetition I would like us to address. Thank you.
Thank you.
When was the last time we executed on one of these annexation agreements and actually annexed somebody into the city under these terms?
I think it was commercial property up north. I can't tell you the year. It's been several years now. But up in the Prathersville area, I know we did one where the annexation agreement preceded the actual annexation by several years.
Mm-hmm.
In the residential subdivision category, I can't think of a one right now where we've actually had that phenomenon where it's gone from a single tract, single owner or developer owner to multiple lots, and we've done annexation. We did do an already developed subdivision Prairie Estates on a lot-by-lot approach. That's off of Crazy Springs Road, west of Vanderveen, and other development where the city has now come out to Bradbury Estates, I think is the other subdivision. But that was not rooted in an annexation agreement. That was an old neighborhood that developed in the county where there was some interest in particular residential owners joining the city. So that's the example I can recall where it was multiple residential owners as part of a subdivision signing.
Okay.
Which is what that process would look like if years go by and then we're contacting 18 separate lot owners about annexation.
Yeah, okay. And then contribution amount, it references the old Hawthorne North development, which was somewhat recent, I mean, within the last several months.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the contribution amount from that development toward that intersection project?
I don't off the top of my head. Bigger because it's more lots, but I believe they used the same methodology. They looked at what the traffic impact would do at a future intersection to the delay,
mm-hmm.
and then basically apportioned that among as fractions of a total cost of a roundabout, which would be the
right.
next,
right.
the kind of the next generation intersection improvement.
Yeah, and then this is 19 lots. And then, I mean, to your point, Ms. Fowler, my recollection from that meeting when we talked about the contribution from Old Hawthorne North was that there were, you know, a few other potential developments of similar size potentially in the works for that area, and then adding those contribution amounts together resulted in paying for a very significant amount of that total intersection project. So
I don't remember that. I'll need to ask for more information.
Right, and I don't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but it was, you know, piecing together, you know, several of these at a much larger scale than what we're talking about here in this development, but it wound up, you know, covering a lot of that cost.
I'll inquire further. Thank you.
Other questions from council? Discussion on this? And I would just, in your regards to the 1997, I was looking at that. So August 97 is when we had that policy resolution. And I think the discussion about pre-annexations and annexations might be a future work session just to kind of talk about how we intentionally grow and how we have those conversations, which I am looking forward to. All right, so Shaylee, would you please read the roll for B10822?
Council Bill 10822, Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Fowler?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
All right, and we're on to the consent agenda. So, Sheila, if you'll read all of the items on the consent agenda, please.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 10322, 10422, 10522, 10722, 10922, and resolutions 4922, 5022, 5122, 5222, and 5322. Bills 10322, 10422, 10522, 10722, 10922, and resolutions 4922, 5022, 5122, 5222, and 5322. Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Fowler?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
All right, and seeing no new business, I'll ask the clerk to read the items under intro and first reading.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 11022, 11122, 11222, 11322, 11422, 11522, 11622, 11722, 11722, 11822, 11922, 11922, 11022, 11122, 11222, 11223, 11224, 11225, 11226, 11227, 11228, 11229, 11222, first reading.
All right, moving on to reports. We have two reports on the city council meeting for this evening. Our first one is report 3122. I'll ask Matt Liu to come join up. You can choose your seat. You want to come with the monthly finance report to city council? Is there anything you would like to highlight from it to bring up?
Yes, I would like to highlight the popular annual financial report. This is our second annual report. It basically highlights everything from the audited financials in a more readable, digestible form.
I, for one, would say thank you. No. Any questions for Mr. Liu? One? No?
Matt, I've seen this before. Has it been printed?
We did print a few last year, so it's a different format, but same presentation. We will print a few this year as well and have them available at the front of City Hall.
I'll just say thank you. It's really nice, and I hope we have more kind of like easy to read information so that we can give it out to constituents about complicated issues.
Thank you. We are working on it.
Yeah. Next, we also have the report 32, which is amendment to the fiscal year 22 annual budget and our interdepartmental transfer of funds. Anything of importance, DeCarlin, that we should know from that? Questions from council? It's information only. All right. Now we are at the, oh my gosh, this is how all the meetings are going to be, right?
Absolutely.
This is what you promised me.
Absolutely.
So we're now at the position of our city council meeting where we ask if anyone from the public would like to speak. Please come up and tell us your name and address, and we'll listen. Like your mask.
Good evening. My name is Old John Conway. My wife Pam and I, we still live at 4902 Thornbrook Ridge. And this occasion this evening, my wife and I would pass our congratulations on to Mayor Buffalo and Councilman Foster for your hard work and again, prove as to how our democracy works. And so what I would, it also gives us an opportunity to continue and reset our governance. And so I would ask that as you would continue your governance, that you would keep that the governance be citizen-centered, that the governance be citizen-centered, and let it start from the citizen and do that. And so then at the end, we can ask ourselves a question when we have good citizen-centered government. we would ask the question, are we and us? Are we and us? It's kind of a little twister there, but we would ask ourselves, as we would come together as a community and a legislative body and our governance, that at the end of some of the deliberation that we would ask ourselves, are we and us? And so in this governance as to what would be an example, and I can only draw upon a little bit as to, I do a lot of work with children and students, and that primarily through Kiwanis and the STEM Alliance and the Surf Foundation, and with the K kids at Locust Street Elementary, where they get to elect their officers and then govern themselves and do projects and community service and raise money and so on, and that they have their governance, and so they start on their path and journey on governance. And then the Builders Club that I work with at Gentry and Jefferson Jr. that do the same thing, and then also the Key Club at Rockbridge. And through the STEM Alliance that I work with, as well as the SURF, and I want you to know that on the SURF, that's the Columbia Educational Robotic Foundation, and it's worthy to note this evening that tomorrow the Army Ants will leave for Houston, Texas, and they will compete for a world championship. You imagine that as a high schooler going to an event where you would be competing for a world championship. And so what do we ask these children and to think about as they deliberate their governance? And we would ask them, as well as for yourself, to be lifelong learners, because we know through lifelong learning that we become a good problem solver. And then through our problem solving, then we develop our human capacity. And then we prepare these children to lead our community to a better tomorrow. And so in summary with this, my thought would be, as we would have citizen-centered governance, and that we would always ask ourselves, are we and us, that we would meet the city's mission statement. And that mission statement would be that we are democratic, and that we would be transparent, and that we would be efficient. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak at this time? You going to finish your presentation?
No. Jim Windsor, 200 Manor Drive. I from time to time look at the agenda of the Water and Light Board, and I was somewhat shocked at the CIP information for the electric projects, because they were canceling projects because of the whatever the EIEIO report, whatever it's called, the IRP report. You guys haven't even had a work session yet. And that's very problematic to me. I'm going to write it off as staff is so concerned about the condition of the infrastructure that they wanted to get something done. However, I'm not the only one that see that report as a very flawed report for multiple reasons. So I think that you need transparency, certainly as a ratepayer, as someone that voted for what we thought we were going to get in 2015. I want transparency. And as a person who was working for the city and documented in the computer system how the funds that were first from the first bond sale were reallocated because the project was put on hold, there is information that documents how funds were moved around. We all need to know that. Because ratepayers thought they were getting one thing and we have not gotten that. So I hope that staff will provide that to you all. I will continue to ask for it, but going forward, I don't know if Mr. Foster heard from the people on Chapel Hill, but to assume that is going to happen is a big assumption. Because I think that people are going to come out and say, wait a minute, we voted for something else. We don't want you tearing up our actual backyards, because the Nifong corridor, it would have hung over the street. The Chapel Hill, it will truly be in the backyards. And if you haven't driven the two different options, I encourage you to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public wish to speak? Open up any council comments.
So can I borrow the handout that I gave, the little flyer?
Oh, okay. Love Columbia.
Because I already left the rest of them back there. Okay, so 2 weeks ago, I told you that this brochure was about to be released. There is an electronic version of this on Love Columbia's website. I take these with me everywhere and hand them out because each of us can do something to help find places for our families to live. Jessica Macy, who's the executive director of Flourish and is coordinating the housing vouchers that are available for low-income people, said, I saw her the other day, and she said that everyone who's on the Functional Zero Task Force priority housing list has been offered a voucher. But if they can't use that, if a landlord won't accept it from them within 90 days, they lose the voucher and they have to re-enter the process to apply for another voucher. So I literally do this. Whenever I see an empty house in the first ward, I copy down the address. I go look up whatever information. I talk to people I know. I get that information to Love Columbia. I email it to Conrad Hake, who is their housing coordinator person, because we're going to solve this one house at a time, one apartment that's available at a time, one family at a time. But we do not have enough places, and we're not even talking about yet about the unsheltered folks. That's another layer in the ladder of housing. So please take this with you. Read it until it sinks in. Read it every day until you're able to tell other people one of those 22 steps, because seriously, that's how we're going to solve it this time. And then we can, with the reflection of hindsight, we can then talk about a way forward. But let's see what we can do now. This is very well written. It's easy to understand. I read it and see, oh my gosh, I could do that one thing. And that's all we need to do, each of us, just one thing, and find houses for our families. So thank you. And I take them with me everywhere. I hand them out. I talk about them. This Wednesday, the Housing and Community Development Commission is going to have their biannual needs public hearing where people will come in and give them presentations about what they need. This is no longer live on the city's website, but it's been up for a while. But when I saw the spreadsheet earlier today of the number of responses, there were only 28 responses from the first ward. And we know there's 21,000 people that live in the first ward. I was counting first ward only, but so we need to think longer term about how we increase the number of people that have access to this, that respond to this, and that feel like they're a part of that discussion. So I wanted to let you know that I'm sure city staff can get us a copy of what the questions are. There's only a couple of text fields here. You know, you might want to look at the questions and see what kind of information are we collecting, and does that fit what our community is struggling with right now? Because our needs are different than they were before the pandemic, and we've had the opportunity to reflect on that over the course of the last 2 years. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other council comments?
With permission from the rest of council, I wanted to ask staff to draft a policy resolution regarding maternity and paternity leave for council members, present and future. We currently don't have anything like that in place, and I think it would be helpful to put some guardrails up for whenever somebody needs to use it. I would need the majority of council to support pushing that forward and having staff draft that. So I wanted to posit that question for you all.
Would you like to entertain a motion for that?
Oh, yeah, I would love to make a motion to have staff draft a maternity and paternity policy resolution for City Council.
I would second that. Any questions, discussion on that?
There's nothing in place at all right now in any way?
Nope. Up until this point, we've not had a pregnant council member to need it. So.
Right. And I assume that there are provisions for city staff.
Correct. The city is falls under the Family Medical Leave Act provisions.
Right. Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Nancy. Sorry.
No, that is correct. The we actually, so that the city code really provides, and we haven't gotten to the kind of the council orientation piece of this yet, but the city code has an affirmative duty to vote for council members. So you have to request leave of council to abstain. And the same way goes with absences from council meetings, unless it is for purposes of being sick or unavoidable consequences, which I think the request for the policy is to ensure that a maternity or paternity leave would qualify as an approved leave of council so that a council member does not have to request permission during a period of time.
Exactly. Thank you.
Matt, you had a comment?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what I was going to ask, because I remember there being some provision about absence with, I guess, leave of or permission of council or whatever. So just making sure that that was.
Yeah, for me, it was really, I wanted to see something that was clearly articulating this particular need and providing those guardrails for somebody who would need to use them.
Yeah.
So that we're expressly clear about it.
Comment.
Yeah, on a different matter. These are just comments in general.
No, this was not. This idea of having the request from council for, especially something like drafting like a policy resolution, so that you know that there's the support of council. This is where I would then call to question all those in favor of having council or having staff draft the policy resolution that is supporting. Oh, did you have a comment?
I'm voting yes.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Anyone have a problem? No. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up.
Great. Just a few compliments, actually. I mean, certainly, Madam Mayor Buffalo, congratulations.
Thank you.
And also for the 4th Ward Councilman, congratulations as well. And I didn't get a chance to mention it, but I wanted to also thank Matthew Liu, the Finance Chief, for his good work, as usual, with the simple and the complex. When it comes to the budget and comes to finance, so I don't think we take enough time every once in a while to compliment the staff. And without the staff, we would be kind of dead in the water. So I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Going down the line, Nick, any comments?
Good to be here.
Yeah, just a question for Sheila. Real quick. What is the deadline for the city to notify the county clerk about items on the August ballot?
May 24th, if that is a Tuesday.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm going to, so I'll make a motion here in a moment, but I just wanted to bring this up and explain my motion before I make it. Our now most recent mayor, could be quite the parliamentarian at times. So I'm gonna try to play parliamentarian for a second.
You are on TV.
Yeah, I know. So I've made no secret that, I think that, I'm gonna go back to trash again, that we have been completely unresponsive in terms of addressing all of the concerns and criticisms we've heard about our trash system. So I'm going to go to a section of the code that allows upon majority vote of council to reconsider subject matter within 90 days of a previously defeated bill. So the motion I'm going to make here in a second is to reconsider two bills from the night before the election, one that would have repealed a ban on automated collection, and the other that called for a special election in August. If a majority of council were so interested, that would allow for the reintroduction of those bills at our May 2nd meeting, and then consideration of those bills on May 16th prior to the deadline of May 24th to notify the county about matters to be on the August election.
We did have that election the day after that vote, and this obviously was an issue that was, I think that our two new members would attest to how much they heard about the subject during the campaign. And so I wanted to, I thought before it would have been more appropriate to give them the opportunity to weigh in on it then, and they'll. So I wanted to give them the opportunity to weigh in on it now. So I am going to go ahead and make a motion to reconsider Bills 8822 and Bill 8922 for introduction at the next council meeting.
Second.
All right, so time for discussion, and I'm going to take the purview of asking the first question because I have the mic and the gavel. So your question is about right now the motion is just to bring those back for intro at the May 2nd meeting and then discussion and vote at the May 16th meeting.
That's correct.
Okay. That was just my clarification on the motion.
Because otherwise no council member may reintroduce a bill less than 90 days after a similar bill was defeated.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions for the motion?
I just want to clarify, we're talking about if we go ahead and reconsider this, what we're reconsidering is whether or not the ballot initiative or the ballot initiative would show up in August. Is that right?
Correct. And whether or not the ban on automated collection would remain in place. Yes.
Other questions? This is kind of, the discussion before we vote on whether or not to do it.
I just thought I'd weigh in here on this issue. I think I made it pretty clear when we spoke about this, when we took the vote. I think it's totally appropriate to get a reasonable reading here from the public in terms of a referendum. Since this was established with a referendum, I don't want to disenfranchise those folks that originally in 2016 put this on the ballot and into the ordinances. I think the city council has the purview to do this. I don't think the city council should do that without another referendum to really find out where the public is. I know there's a tremendous amount of controversy about this. I'm not entirely convinced yet where the public is, and I think we owe it to ourselves and the public for them to decide what it is that we ought to do, and I think it was appropriate for us to make the vote and put it on the August 2nd ballot. So that's my position.
Any other discussion on the motion? Okay, so I think the one question that I would have in addition to the clarification on that is we have an upcoming work session with Solid Waste, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And can you speak to how that discussion, I guess my question is, from what was voted on the April 4th election, is preventing any of the tools that Solid Waste will be bringing to us to hopefully come up with solutions for our current issues, current and for the last 10 years issues?
So for the May 2nd meeting, what we'll do is we'll talk about just different options. So we'll look at everything from outsourcing to roll cards and kind of give you a perspective on what each one means and what are the benefits and what are the downfalls for those. And hopefully through that, we can kind of figure out a better path forward. But it's to lay all options on the table to see exactly how they can play into effect.
Right, I guess it just makes me feel a little bit questioning of like that being on there, but if this is something that we're not talking about, you know what I mean?
Right,
like it's
right,
not
yeah,
a tool that we currently have in our toolbox.
Right, and so correct. And so with the current, the current language, which doesn't really allow us to really look at roll cards, we kind of have our hands tied, so that's an option that's not really there. What we're presenting as if it is a possibility. And so
I think, yeah, so my question is that concern over that, right? Not having a tool to do our job. And then the second one is also, you mentioned 2016, and we all know, like, we had lots of questions about confusion over the language. And I fear we're going to have the same in August. And so I didn't know if staff had a plan or if people have a plan for how to provide clarification.
And so I think the language for the ballot would be the language that was put into the petition. And so we can't deviate from that.
Okay. Okay. All right. Any other questions?
I have a follow-up.
Yeah.
It was my understanding that the petitioners spoke with our general counsel in advance of formulating the petition. Is that true, Mr. Seawood? Was she part of that discussion about how to word it?
Would you like to me answer?
Yeah, please. Okay. But I usually direct my questions to Carlin, and he can.
So normally when anyone is going to present a petition, they will come in and talk with me. And I can talk to them about the form and format of what needs to be used. We did draft up the ballot language as part of the ordinance that council reviewed and approved. So that ballot language has already been set as a part of the ordinance that was adopted by the city council to place this on the ballot.
And the reason why I asked is because it was pretty clear to me when I read that, that were those two items that were on the last agenda, exactly what the ballot language was. Now, I know there's a certain number of folks in the city because they have other things that take their attention that they don't pay close attention to the same kind of discussion that we have. But I think the ballot language is pretty clear because I understood from Rachel that she came and talked to you ahead of time about the ballot language.
You know, I don't recall specifically. I mean, it's been a really long time ago, and I don't know, you know, if they changed the ballot language, you know, before or after we spoke, but I normally will at least sit down and talk with someone about the parameters and what a petition looks like in the form and format. Like, I don't provide specific legal advice to them, mm-hmm. but I do talk to them about form and format.
And I guess for clarifying for me, it was more that question of what does it mean? And so people are saying, oh, does this mean we get them? You know, and then they're like, oh, no, it means it's that we're, you know, so I guess to clarify
Do we lift the ban or do the voters lift the ban?
Right.
But as I understand what we just talked about, we are still going to talk about all those options at the work session. We don't have the ability to implement them until we get the results of the August election. But we're going to talk about it. The current ordinance doesn't prevent us from talking about it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Yeah.
So do you want to, you want to vote on to see whether or not to bring back, and I don't know, Sheila, if you were marking down what is the request we're making.
He probably has it better, but
reconsider.
Yeah.
Reconsider the subject matter in bills 8822 and 8922.
Okay. So all those, and let's do it as a roll. Is that
roll
call? Because you have to have four, right,
correct,
to make the request. So all those in favor, those in favor of the reconsideration to bring back bills 88 and 89.
Mayor, if I may.
Yes.
It's to reconsider the subject matter of those two
subject
bills.
Matter.
It's not to bring those two bills back specifically.
Thank you, Nancy.
Would you like me to call the roll?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yes?
I was just going to say, the reason it is to bring back the subject matters.
Yes, because
we
can't bring back the same thing.
Correct. It will not be the exact same. We have to have a brand new bill number and all of those things. So
correct.
I didn't want to try to confuse the situation anymore.
Can I ask a question, just a parliamentary question? And that is, reconsideration of an issue requires that someone voted in the, it does not require that? You know what I'm about to say.
Right. A reconsideration of a bill at the meeting in which the matter was voted on does require someone who's on the prevailing side.
Okay.
What Councilmember Pitzer has requested is reconsideration of the subject matter
okay.
of those two
All
bills.
All right. All right. Thank
at
you.
At a future meeting.
Ready? Okay. To reconsider the subject matter of those two bills, Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Fowler?
No.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
No.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
All right. Any other? We kind of did the roll of comments by council. So you were our last one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any comments by staff?
I don't have anything.
Okay, well then it is my privilege to adjourn my first meeting. How loud do I have to hit that?
Give it some umph. Give it some umph.
There you go. Sorry, I'll get better.
That felt about right. All right.